I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, since 2000, USAID programs have saved more than 92 million lives. That's according to an independent analysis published by The Lancet. But no more. President Trump, with billionaire Elon Musk, they destroyed the agency founded by John F. Kennedy to help the most struggling populations on the planet. USAID was fed to the wood chipper. Those are Musk's words. Musk has claimed that not one single life has been lost due to the closing of USAID, but the evidence tells a different story. So what happened and what was lost? What has this done to America's reputation around the world? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For more than six decades, the U.S. Agency for International Development delivered food, medicine, and humanitarian assistance around the world. Its programs helped fight HIV/AIDS, Ebola, TB, malaria. It vaccinated children and monitored outbreaks that could threaten the United States. But on the day that President Donald Trump returned to office, that all ended, a screeching halt. His administration froze foreign assistance and began dismantling U.S. aid. Elon Musk, then leading the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, said he fed U.S. aid into the wood chipper. Nicholas Enrich witnessed the process from inside the agency. He served under four presidential administrations and was USAID's acting assistance administrator for global health as the shutdown unfolded. He recounts the experience in his book, Into the Wood Chipper, a whistleblower's account of how the Trump administration shredded USAID and has ended. But the big question we're going to be looking at here is, has the ending of USAID made America less safe? Nicholas Enrich joins us now, and welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me.
So there's has been questions, and it's been kind of murky, the story of USAID. I don't know how much Americans really knew about it. I mean, I can't even figure out, am I supposed to call it USAID or USAID?
You know what? Either one works, and I get that question all the time. I call it USAID just because it's a little fewer syllables, but people call it USAID, USAID, sometimes USAID.
So do you think that there was a lack of understanding by the American people of what this agency did and why it was so important?
Yeah, I think that that maybe was one of the things that made USAID uniquely vulnerable, was that the American people didn't know as much about the direct impacts of the agency. I think that's probably because a lot of the most immediate and direct beneficiaries of our programs were overseas. However, the agency was not, an international charity. It was a national security apparatus that kept Americans safer, both from infectious diseases, as our work helped prepare the world to detect infectious diseases before they became threats potentially to Americans, but also through American generosity and goodwill and this kind of like foundation of partnerships that it brought through soft power, and a very small investment was able to have a huge impact on creating a more stable and safer and stronger world for Americans to benefit from.
Our phone lines are open. Our listeners, you want to give us a call, have a question, a comment about USAID going into the wood chipper. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So explain, go into deeper detail. Why is it in America's best interest to have a program like USAID? And you said soft power. A lot of people don't know what that is. So break that down.
Sure. I mean, I think there are several reasons why it's in America's interest to have a program like USAID. The first I worked in global health, and I think one thing that all Americans have learned since the COVID pandemic was that infectious diseases do not stop at international borders. And one of the things that we did and invested in significantly, especially since the pandemic, was to improve health systems in countries around the world to make sure that they had the resources and technologies and capacity they needed to identify potential disease threats before they became, a potential epidemic or pandemic that might affect Americans. In that way, the work we did in global health especially helped keep people safe in the United States as well. But also, I mean, the work that that we did, I heard you quote earlier, the Lancet study, which found that 92 million lives were saved as a result of USAID's programs over the last 20 years alone. The programs and the impact that we've had has been able to build a goodwill for that Americans have been able to benefit as we've been seen as kind of this global leader, both in global health, but also in other sectors as well, that has allowed us to kind of demonstrate that America is a generous, strong nation that is there to work with and support countries when they're going through challenging and difficult times. And that's something that we've been able to benefit from both economically and in terms of in terms of a more safe and secure world.
Billionaire Elon Musk has said, and he was the one who was really responsible for ending USAID with Donald Trump. He said that the ending of USAID did not cost a single life. No one died because this happened. But there has been reporting that has names and dates and circumstances that shows that is not true. So can we just go get into that? Elon Musk saying that no one died because of this, can we just say that's a falsehood?
It's absolutely false. And he's not the only one who has spread that lie. Marco Rubio has also said that no one has died as a result of the cuts to USAID. And it's just patently untrue. I mean, we have seen reporters and journalists have gone out and identified the specific individuals in numerous cases of people who have died specifically because of services that were cut off that USAID had been providing. But on a broader scale, we have seen conservative estimates showing that 750,000 people died overall in the first year since USAID was shut down unnecessarily because of those cuts. And that same Lancet study estimates that up to 14 million people might die by 2030 due to these cuts. And it's, you know, it's a lot of the impact was immediate as health clinics that were providing, you know, drugs and other life-saving emergency services to folks was shuttered overnight. But also, you know, I think the impact is really yet to be fully realized as we have lost a global immunization campaign. We have seen babies being born at clinics with HIV at rates of up to 25% in clinics where just a year ago those rates were near zero. And so, unfortunately, I think the true impacts are yet to be seen.
That's just one of many lies that Elon Musk told about the ending of USAID. One of them also about how that they would not shut down Ebola prevention programs, but they did.
That's correct. On multiple occasions, Elon Musk stood in the White House and told the American public that there had been no interruption to Ebola prevention activities. And I knew that to be a lie at the time because I was working behind the scenes with my colleagues to desperately try to restart Ebola activities to respond to an Ebola outbreak that at that time was in Uganda. And we had been able to make no progress whatsoever. And so it was shocking to hear him announce that those programs were continuing when I knew for a fact that they were not.
We still have an Ebola outbreak now centered in the Congo area. We're going to take a break now, and I'm going to get Maya on the air when we come back. She can join the conversation. You can join the conversation by giving us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What are your thoughts about the United States ending its USAID program, a program that helps people around the planet in the most difficult, desperate circumstances. Why are we no longer providing that aid? This is The Source. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Having a conversation with Nicholas Innerich. He's the author of the book Into the Wood Chipper, a whistleblower's account of how the Trump administration shredded USAID, and he was an insider. He saw it all. He was helping lead the agency. We're going to get his story more into that in just a bit, but let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255, and Maya, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
I'd like to bring more awareness about the loss of our soft power throughout the world, where this country was, the light is shining the soft power of the goodwill that we did throughout the world. Well, that's gone. You know, countries are now laughing about our activities that we're doing. That the soft power, the loss of that, how can it be regained? It'll take years if there's any will to regain that.
Maya, thank you so much for your call. Nicholas Innerich, the loss of the soft power, the United States no longer admired around the world. Maya says it's going to take years, maybe longer, to restore that image. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. President Obama said that to many people around the world, USAID was the United States. And I think that's actually true. I mean, sure, people see the president on TV or whatever, but the reality is the way that many people in many developing countries around the world actually interacted with the United States was through the support provided by USAID, whether that was food support or medical support or other educational support. They saw that logo of the people shaking hands and that said "from the American people" on it. And that was one way that we did buy a lot of goodwill around the world. It's sad to think of what it will be like without that. I mean, I think for those who were happy when USAID shut down, there were those who didn't really know what the agency did and were confused and maybe bought into some of the kind of rhetoric about the bad things that USAID were doing, which actually wasn't true. But the people who did know what USAID did that were happy about it, the only ones were those that were in countries that are our adversaries, the autocratic states that are thrilled to see USAID leave and that American influence disappear.
All right, let's go to another caller. We have Terry on the line, and Terry, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Hi. I'm just calling in reference to USAID defunding. I think it's something that got out of control over time, just like any other program with very minimum oversight. And I think it was just something in the meantime to kind of beef up government jobs, but which I get. But I think what I like to know is, do we still have, is there like a GoFundMe or another alternative source that we could donate to help the cause?
All right, Terry, thank you for the question. So first off, he says that, it was a bloated bureaucracy. He says it had gotten out of control. Is that true?
No, I unfortunately disagree with the premise there. I think any government agency, probably any organization, can be more effective and more efficient with its resources. But USAID was widely recognized around the government as one of the most cost-efficient exercises that the government had. We mentioned 92 million lives saved over 20 years. Now, keep in mind, that's on a budget that's less than 1% of the U.S. federal budget. I mean, the amount of impact that was able to be achieved on a shoestring budget speaks to the efficiency of the programs that USAID was running.
And the second part of his question, do you think we can crowdsource a way to do the work of USAID without having it funded by the government?
Well, there's certainly many non-governmental organizations and charity organizations that would be that are absolutely in need of donations to be able to contribute to life-saving work that they are doing.
But like Doctors Without Borders, something like that.
That's one good example. But I just didn't want to give the impression that there's any prospect for those organizations to fill the gap left by the cuts that the government has made to foreign assistance. I mean, first of all, these are on a totally different scale. There are many non-governmental organizations that are contributing to individual like pilot programs or research projects that are absolutely critical and life-saving work, but it was the support of USAID that was able to expand those on a mass scale and actually contribute to that substantial impact. And the other piece I would say is that the disappearance of the U.S. government as an actor in the provision of foreign assistance, even if it could be replaced by private foundations and funds, does kind of, at least symbolically, leave out the fact that the U.S. government has walked away from the world's most vulnerable people. And I think that one of the things that Americans are so frustrated by through the cuts to USAID is kind of just the impression that we are walking away from that leadership role that so many Americans had just assumed that, of course, we are, as a strong and powerful nation, setting a good example from the world, of course, we'll always be there to help those who are in need.
Let's go now to Kevin. And Kevin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I just think it's laughable that we're $40 trillion in debt. Social Security's going broke. I don't understand. I think, you know, that, I've been liberal my whole life, but I'm starting to become more and more conservative because there's just only so much money. And I'm paying enough, man. I work for a Toyota supplier. And I can barely make ends meet, and you're giving millions of dollars away for people that aren't in this country. It's ridiculous.
All right, Kevin, thank you for that. There are lots of programs that the Trump administration is using. They're giving $20 billion in a currency swap with Argentina. They're bailing out Argentina's farmers and ranchers. So there are lots of areas people can point to and wonder, why are those dollars going there, your tax dollars? And you could wonder if USAID would have been a better option. But can I get your reaction, Nicholas?
Sure. Yeah, I think that there is a misconception that that money spent to strengthen systems overseas is actually money wasted. And I'll use the example of the current Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the cuts to USAID cut a budget that we used in that country of a few million dollars to shore up systems to make sure that we could identify a potential Ebola threat and respond to it effectively. And because those were taken away, that small few million dollar investment, now the U.S. government has requested $1 billion in response to an outbreak that's gotten out of control. So I think the point is that when it comes to especially global health investments, an ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure, and you end up the taxpayers are paying a whole lot more money when our response is based on dealing with an outbreak that's already out of control rather than one that we would have been able to identify at its source and shut down before it became a situation that killed a lot more people, but also that ended up costing a lot more money.
So the argument from Donald Trump and Elon Musk with their Department of Efficiency, government efficiency, and so they shut down USAID. They said it was wasting money, fraud and abuse. But when they shut it down, we heard stories about food and the warehouses rotting away. I mean, if they really were concerned about efficiency, then wouldn't they have shut it down in a more in a better process?
Yes, I mean, I think that you can make, I'm certainly open to an argument and an administration's argument that foreign aid is not the way that we want to be investing our resources, that we'd rather focus on issues here at home. But the way that USAID was shuttered created such an enormous amount of waste and was done without any sort of transition planning or I mean, basically what we did was pull the rug out from under the world's most vulnerable people and governments. And the result was this loss of life as well as loss of resources on a massive scale that just didn't have to happen. The reality was that the destruction of USAID was not done based on policy considerations. It was done by a group of uninformed and unqualified political operatives who came in for the purpose of soothing the ego of the world's richest man.
And so the U.S. farmers had a dependable customer with USAID. So what was the impact on U.S. farmers by the loss of that guaranteed customer?
Yeah, it's been enormous. I think that there have been studies that have shown the economic costs, not just to people overseas, but to American businesses as well, especially farmers. One example is the manufacturers of a nutritional supplement that's able to deliver critical nutrients to those who are severely malnourished. Those are American companies who designed that and were, again, their contracts were shut overnight. And the farmers who provided grains and other nutrients to those overseas, those contracts were shut overnight and they were just left holding the bag.
So we heard from the Trump administration that they have shifted the responsibilities of USAID over to the State Department. So are they still doing the work of USAID, but just under a different department?
Not exactly. The State Department did take on basically a skeleton crew of the remnants, a tiny fraction of those who had worked at USAID, and have brought them over to the State Department, where they are attempting to kind of implement some small pieces of USAID's programs. Unfortunately, though, the pieces of the programs that they're implementing are exactly the ones that you would think that they would be trying to move away from if the goal is not to create this kind of long-term cycle of dependency. Because rather than focusing on the activities that strengthened local health systems and strengthened local capacity to be able to eventually and sustainably take on those programs within their own budgets and capacities, instead, we've cut all of those programs out, and the State Department is just focusing on things like providing life-saving drugs, the most costly and emergency services.
Right. So help break that down, because it's kind of, there's a lot of bureaucratic business there. Are we still doing the work of USAID?
No, not in the same way that it was done, unfortunately. There are some small investments that the U.S. government continues to make through the State Department to cover some emergency situations in developing countries, but it is they have effectively abandoned the development approach that USAID had brought, and the majority of the investments that the agency used to make.
So Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, he was a big supporter of USAID when he was the senator from Florida. What happened there?
That's right. I mean, actually, after Trump won the election, and I learned that that his appointment for the Secretary of State was going to be Marco Rubio, that felt like a real win for foreign assistance and international development. Because as you say, Marco Rubio is one of the staunchest supporters of USAID, and if you need some excellent quotes on why it was important to maintain funding for international development, look no further than Marco Rubio, who said that basically was the cheapest and most effective way that we could build that we could protect Americans from threats overseas by ensuring that people's hearts and minds were won over by the generous support of the American people.
And, yeah, but as soon as the Trump administration said they didn't want USAID anymore, he folded like a white flag. We got to take a break here. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Congress passed the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961, which authorized the foreign aid programs and directed the executive branch to administer them through a specialized agency. President John F. Kennedy formally organized the USAID program through an executive order, which he signed on November 3rd, 1961, which happens to be the day that I was born. I have now lived longer than USAID. So our guest, Nicholas Inrich, has written the book Into the Wood Chipper, the whistleblower's account of how the Trump administration shredded USAID. How is it that the Trump administration was able to shred USAID when it was formed through an act of Congress?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, that is the subject of my book, is how they were able to come in and destroy a congressionally established agency that enjoyed broad bipartisan support. And the simplest answer is that they were able to do it by overstepping the power of the executive branch in multiple ways, including utilizing DOGE, who was like truly not an established government entity that was able to make decisions and kind of take over power from the executive branch. But most importantly, what they did was ignore court orders and flaunt court orders that were telling them to stop what they were doing in terms of destroying the agency. And probably the single greatest factor to allow the agency to be destroyed was that Congress, who did have the power to stand up and to fold down agencies, just stood by and did nothing as the executive branch clearly violated the separation of powers.
So is Congress complicit in the destruction of USAID because we had a Republican vassal-controlled Congress? They didn't fight back, or are the courts going to do anything? It's been a year and a half. Why hasn't the Supreme Court ruled on something about, you know, this was an illegal act?
Yeah, I do actually think that the single greatest factor was that Congress stood by and watched when they had the power to intervene. And, you know, some people will say that, well, that's because they also didn't like USAID, and so they were happy to see it go. But not only is that not true based on the way that USAID had been funded and reauthorized through Congress, it enjoyed broad bipartisan support throughout its existence. But even if they didn't agree with what USAID was doing and didn't like the agency, the way that it was destroyed by the executive branch rather than through legislative action sets a horrendous precedent.
Right, they should have been interested in protecting their Article I powers.
So exactly.
Let's go to a caller. We have Barbara. We'll get to Jose next. But Barbara, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this program. It's incredibly important. I have to say I was absolutely stunned, which is the nicest way I can frame this, when I heard that USAID was being wiped out. I've had two very dear friends that were heavily involved in USAID. One was the country director for Dominican Republic when they were nearly wiped off the map with a hurricane of 20 some odd years ago. And she was, after helping, you know, provide food and clothing and medicine and everything else to these people, she was nearly revered as a saint by helping get those people back up on their feet. And she kept saying, it's not me. It's not me. This is USAID. And another friend that was in Afghanistan during that whole, you know, horrible period. You know, it's the single most, USAID was the single most important thing we've ever done for the world. And for us to be not involved in it anymore is absolutely heartbreaking. So So thank you so much for doing this program. It's really important.
Barbara, thank you for your calls and those stories. Very important to hear that. Nicholas Innerich, where was the outrage? Why did the public not stand up and shout, this is wrong and we don't like this? We're supposed to be a Christian nation. This should be part of something that we're all about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to some degree, people did stand up and speak out, although it certainly was not anything that you heard in the halls of Congress. But, you know, before January of 2025, I would say that the vast majority of Americans had never even heard of USAID. And I certainly would not come on a program like this without defining what the acronym stood for, which is the Agency for International Development. But somehow between then and July of 2025, when the agency was destroyed, all of a sudden, we have heard from people in all 50 states who have actually been outside protesting the destruction of the agency and have expressed their outrage for how upset they are. But I think where we're missing that outrage is, like I said, within the halls of Congress.
Well, that could change. Let's go to Jose on the phones. Jose, you're on the source. Go. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. I'd like to urge listeners to Google or use your AI, Google CIA involvement with USAID, and you will undoubtedly find a trove of documentation on the CIA being using USAID as a conduit for their operations across all over the world, including Venezuela, Afghanistan, Cuba, and of course, Eastern Europe. USAID would use the CIA would use USAID as a conduit to undermine governments through their services. All right, and so it wasn't just this is a cold. The USAID was a Cold War tool, and it has been used for. By the CIA for decades. Now, what I want to know is when Trump dismantled USAID, a lot of those agencies were put under the cover, went to the State Department. Marco Rubio is handling those agencies. What I'd like to know is how many of those are still surviving and still in operation.
Okay. Jose, thank you for your question. We talked about that earlier. Is there anything to add to that, Nicholas Innerich? And I do want to get to the spy situation as well.
But yeah. I would like to focus on the piece about the CIA. I mean, this is a conspiracy theory that has been espoused by a variety of folks on social media, especially a guy by the name of Mike Benz, who is somebody who Elon Musk listens to very closely. I mean, as with all conspiracy theories, there is this kernel of truth underneath, which is that it is absolutely true that USAID was established as a Cold War instrument to combat the spread of communism, of Soviet communism, and to combat that through American soft power, through outreach and showing American generosity to support a country's development. I think that the conspiracy theory makes me laugh a little bit because it gives USAID way too much credit as if we were.
I mean, there are a lot better ways to go about toppling governments than giving out polio vaccines.
Exactly. The USA that I knew and worked for a dozen years had no involvement with the CIA whatsoever. Our job was to make sure that taxpayer funds were used to achieve the objectives that we were trying to, including increasing global life expectancy, expanding access to quality health care, to expand access to nutritional support and to improve literacy rates around the world. I think that the argument that it was somehow this kind of like secret tool of the CIA shows a disregard for how the federal agencies function with one another.
But you know, That's exactly what a spy would say. Let's go to Justin on the phones. Justin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
My question is, how much did the United States taxpayers fund annually for USAID, and what was the return that came back to the United States as far as their investment on, you know, them giving this money and this aid to basically pretty much everybody in the, I guess, undeveloped world?
All right. Thank you, Justin. So let's break it down. How much did it cost to run USAID, and what did we get in return?
Sure. So so the total budget of USAID was approximately $40 billion a year.
Say it again, 400?
No, sorry, 40.
$40 billion.
Billion, which works out to about 0.3% of the federal budget every year, and costs the taxpayer an average of $36 per year. And what we got in return was, well, if you don't count the value of the 92 million lives saved that I mentioned earlier, we have seen some of the early recipients of countries that were once recipients of aid have transformed into some of our greatest trading partners, like South Korea, for example, where we have been able to benefit from economic relationships with them. And at least in the health world, where I can speak to, most of the investments that we made, for example, a dollar invested in combating malaria actually produces results of approximately $43 in terms of the cost of actually treating those cases. And for example, when we had an Ebola case during 2014 that actually came to the United States from the West Africa outbreak, it cost, I think, $54 million to deal with I think the two or maybe three Ebola cases that were actually came to the United States, whereas that same investment if used for prevention, actually is likely to prevent outbreaks from developing so that we would never get cases in the United States.
Yeah, but $40 billion a year, I mean, that's like 40 White House ballrooms that we could have had instead of helping people around the world. So you have to think about it in those terms. We're going to take a break here, and we'll continue. We'll come back with the conversation with Nicholas Innerich. His book is Into the Woodchipper, a whistleblower's account of how the Trump administration shredded USAID. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Into the Woodchipper. That's what Elon Musk said he did to USAID. And now there's a book, Into the Woodchipper, a whistleblower's account of how the Trump administration shredded USAID. We're joined by the author. He is a whistleblower about what happened, Nicholas Innerich. So this is a difficult question here, but, you know, Donald Trump has called these places where USAID was trying to help. He called them S-hole countries, is how he refers to them. Do you think race played a role in deciding that they don't want USAID because who they were helping?
Well, I don't know if it did specifically. I mean, certainly the majority of countries where we worked supported people who were Black and brown. But that wasn't the entirety of our support. We provided support in Ukraine was one of our larger supported countries, as well as others in Europe and Eurasia and Central Asia. Those people, trust me, have been suffering as well. But certainly when it fits in with the broader foreign policy of the Trump administration, if you take a country like South Africa, which has some of the highest burdens of HIV and some of the other diseases that we work to fight against and have driven the burdens of those epidemics in Southern Africa, and then find that the U.S. government is refusing to have any engagement in terms of a conversation related to foreign assistance because of the false narrative of the mistreatment of white farmers in that country, I think the effects certainly are clear.
Let's look into the guts of the woodchipper. So when Elon Musk and his crew from Doge got control of the computers over at USAID, what did they do? What did they find?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first things that they did was they broke into the human resource systems and the IT systems, and they just started shutting people off of access to email and started tinkering with things to basically kick them out of the agency, which wreaked chaos in a situation where Rubio was now saying that. That while they're freezing all foreign assistance, there should be this exception for life-saving activities. But we couldn't restart the life-saving activities because Elon Musk and Doge had gotten rid of all the experts that were needed to restart those programs. So that's just one example
So they
of some of
cleared
the
out
chaos.
databases, they got rid of critical information that was necessary to do the work. I mean, they were deliberately doing the slash and burn tactics with USAID.
That's correct. They broke the payment system that would have been needed to move money, including to those that were authorized to continue work under that life-saving exception. And ultimately, against court orders, they terminated all the contracts that would have been needed to restart life-saving work, including for some simple Ebola activities like screening passengers at airports to make sure they didn't get onto international flights with symptoms of Ebola, or providing personal protective equipment to the frontline health workers to make sure that they were at less of a risk of getting exposed to the virus. The contracts that were needed to provide those services were terminated by Doge literally the day after Elon Musk stood in the White House and said that those activities were continuing.
Did Donald Trump make promises that he was going to end USAID when he was running for president at that time?
He did not. In fact, one of the other things that we did when Trump won the 2024 election was to see what the policy positions were likely to be. The first place we looked was Project 2025, which kind of laid this like blueprint for what the policy priorities would be for the new administration. And there was a whole section on foreign assistance, 28 pages in there. And there were some things that in it that it disagreed with that had been happening under the Biden administration and some priorities that it was looking for. But ultimately, it saw USAID as a critical foreign policy component, and there was nothing in there about getting rid of it.
So the central question that I have is, has ending, putting USAID into the wood chipper, has that made America less safe? We've talked about with these diseases that are spreading around the world, USAID was trying to actually wipe out polio. We've seen that they had soft power, which was a way for American influence to try to support for human rights and human dignity and democracy around the world. That's been eroded. Also, the ability to gather information and strike up positive relationships around the world, that's now ended. There's a lot going on here that makes people think that the destruction of USAID has made America less safe. I mean, what's your impact on that? What's your idea on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, another example, just like as of yesterday, I think President Trump was tweeting that trying to find out when the Iranian people were going to rise up and take over the government so that he could end that war that is happening there. And it just, it's frustrating because some of the work that USAID was doing was to support the pro-democracy and pro-rights groups in Iran that would have supported those people who are exactly the ones he's referring to that would have like moved forward with those democratic movements and been the ones who would have taken back their government. But that support was cut for them, like it was for people all around the world back in 2025, and those groups were forced underground and were persecuted and were retaliated against and put in an even more difficult position, and made it even less likely for them to respond to President Trump's call. But from a national security perspective, again, I'm a global health person, and what really scares me is how far back we've been set in our pandemic preparedness. What we have pulled out of the World Health Organization, which has made us no longer able to we're basically flying blind from what infectious diseases are out there these days. We were late to learn because of that, of the current Ebola outbreak in Democratic Republic of Congo, what we saw with the Hanta virus. These are examples of how much ground we have given up in terms of pandemic preparedness. And neither Ebola nor Hanta virus, these aren't diseases that are likely to develop into the next pandemic. But what worries me is that when the next respiratory virus or whatever that actually is a threat to become a pandemic, we are totally unprepared and ill-prepared to stop it.
So if there's a change in administration, if Congress changes control, could there be a way to restore U.S. aid? Would it have to be restarted from the ground up? Is there anything there, any institutional framework still there in order to make this happen again? Or has the personnel, institutional knowledge, and relationships, have they all been permanently lost?
So no, I think there absolutely is a way, and as the impacts of the destruction caused by shuttering USAID become clear, I think it'll have to be reconstituted in some form. I mean, the way that DOGE came in and illegally destroyed the agency actually left doors open, including that nobody's actually wiped USAID off the official legislation. It still exists technically in law. And I think the experts are people who have devoted their careers and their lives to this kind of work and would come back in a heartbeat. I think the bigger concern is the trust that we've broken and lost around the world. And I think that is going to take a lot longer to rebuild than it did to break, because we had made promises to governments and to people around the world that we were there to take care of them and to support them, the most vulnerable people in society. And we walked away from them. And I think that countries are rightly wondering, even if we were to come back again, what would stop us from leaving again at the drop of a hat the next time, the next Republican administration or whatever it is. And I think that in order to avoid that, we're going to have to recognize and grapple with ourselves. Like, is the idea of providing foreign assistance, is that a political issue that's for Democrats, yes, Republicans, no, or whatever? Or is that
I
an
mean, we don't have
American
to look at
policy?
this Republican versus Democrats framework. That is no longer applicable. We need to just stop thinking that way. And we just think, what is the right thing to do? And the United States has all this abundance, and we're asking just only to share a small, tiny fraction, less than 1%, to help so many people from dying and living in miserable conditions and stopping diseases. It's really hard to come up with a good argument. And we've heard from people saying, well, what about the money? I mean, we spend more money than this on all sorts of crazy things that don't have to happen in the United States. Look at how many times Trump goes golfing. I mean, why don't we spend money to help people? That's really what we need to be talking about.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that we do need to recognize that this is not a political issue. It's an American values issue. I think that the issue of saving money is like a false narrative when it comes to the investment for USAID. Given what a tiny, tiny fraction of the budget that it was, there's much more simple places to save money that have much smaller impacts around the world.
So
And
do you
while
think
that
that you will go back to form some other agency that if we are able to recover from this nightmare that we're in now, that we're able to get an agency going again, a new USAID 2.0, you think you'll go back?
I definitely feel like I've been burned recently in that work. But yes, I would go back in a heartbeat, because it's the work that I'm committed to and that I dedicated my career to. And I would absolutely take another opportunity to be able to have that sort of impact in a positive sense around the world.
All right, there is hope. Nicholas Enrich, thank you so much. Appreciate you talking to us. Into the Wood Chipper is the name of the book. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.